12th principle, Ani Mamin Be'emuna Shleima. I believe with complete faith, B'vias HaMashiach, in the coming of Mashiach, V'afal Pishis Ma'amein, even though he may tarry. Yom Kol Zachak Kali V'chol Yom Sheyovei, nonetheless, I will wait for him every day that he might come. And the questions that we asked last time and that we will need to continue to work on in the next session as well is, why is this so important that the Rambam considers it an article of faith? What would be missing without it if we believe in Hashem and we believe in His oneness and we believe in the prophecy of Moshe and we believe in reward and punishment? What's missing? What would we not have? Granted that it's a wonderful thing, but what very critical factor would be missing from our faith? We also need to know what the times of Mashiach will involve. What are we to expect? What's the texture of life then? And we have yet to explore how will we know who Mashiach is, how will we, what tests will we put him to in order to be able to discern. And some other questions that we have yet to ask. I'd like to explore with you first today, and we'll go back a little bit again afterwards. I'd like to explore with you today a little bit about the times of Mashiach, what we might anticipate the times of Mashiach are going to present to us. What is the nature of life in the time of Mashiach? And it is at first blush, it presents us with some what appear to be contradictions about what life then is supposed to be. Let me read some excerpts from the last perek in the Hilchos Melachim, where the Rambam describes the times of Mashiach. And he says it very definitively and very forcefully. Al yala al halev, he says, it should not... do not allow yourself to think that the conventional stream or current of life, the natural order of life, will in any way be disturbed or negated, so that it will involve some new some new development, some dramatic appearance of something different in the works of creation. Ela olam kimin hagei nayuk. He says the world will continue in much the same way as we know it today. And now he has a problem. What do we do with some of the references, the fairly explicit premises of the prophets, which I will read a little bit more extensively from in a moment. For example, where it says in Yeshaya, the Navi Isaiah says, V'ger, V'gor, wait a minute. I will read it. V'gor ze'evim keves. And the wolf will dwell with the lamb, v'nomerim gidi yirbats, and the leopard with the goat will lie down, v'egel uchfir umri yachdov, and the fat calf along with the lion will be together, v'na'a kotei ne'egvom, and a young lad will lead them. So he says, what about that? So he says, it's moshel v'chida. It's a parable.
The dark curtain?
No higbam. So he says, this is a parable. Inyan hadavar. He says, but the direction, the gist, the essence of the parable is sheyiyu Yisrael yeshvin levetach im risha Yaakov, that Israel will live securely amongst the wicked of the idolatrous nations, who are likened unto the wolves and the leopards. V'yechzru kulam nudas emes, and all of the wicked amongst the nations will return to this faith of truth, and they will no longer engage in theft and destruction, but they will eat those things which are permissible, and will live in peace gently with Israel. And similarly, he says, all of the references, all of the descriptions of the time of Mashiach are parables. And in the time of Mashiach, it will become manifestly clear exactly what the parable means. So we really don't know for sure. Amru Chachamim, he continues, our sages have taught us, Ein bein olam hazeh limois ha-Mashiach ela shibud malchus bilvad. That there is nothing which distinguishes between the world as we know it today and the time of Mashiach other than Israel's current subjugation to the nations and its freedom from oppression in the time of Mashiach. And it would seem, he says, from the words of our prophets, that at the beginning of the time of Mashiach there will be this epic battle with Gog and Magog. What is it called? Armageddon?
Yeah.
Armageddon. And before the war with Gog and Magog, a prophet will arise to straighten the hearts of Israel, to prepare them. As it's written, behold, I will send to you the prophet Elijah, and he will not come, not to render things tameh or tahor, not to render that which is tahor tameh, nor to render that which is tameh tahor, not to compromise the status of people who are held in to be becheskes kashrus, people who are accepted as people who derive from a legitimate origin, and so on. Ela lasum shalim b'olam. The role of Mashiach is going to be to bring peace to the world, as it's or Eliyahu HaNovi, as a predecessor, as it's written, Veishu Levavi Salbonim, you will restore the hearts of the parents to the children, and so on. In the time of Melech HaMashiach, the King Mashiach, when his kingdom will be settled and all of Israel will be gathered unto him, then all of Israel will relate to the divine inspiration which will rest upon him. And he continues that the sages of Israel and the prophets did not desire or yearn for the times of Mashiach, not in order that they might rule over the world, not that they might rule over the idolaters, not that the nations should honor them, not that they might eat and drink and be merry, but exclusively and only for the purpose that they might be free to study the Torah and its wisdom without oppression, in order that they might merit the reward of the world to come. And in that time, he concludes, there will be neither hunger nor war, neither jealousy nor competition, because God's blessing will be abundant, and all of the pleasures of the world will be as abundant as the dust. And the entire world's concern and interest and activity will be only to know of the Lord alone. And in that time, Israel will be the sages of the world who will hold the secrets of which the world will seek their knowledge, and they will Israel will understand and know their Creator as it is possible for man to know. As it's written, and this is his last line, the world will be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters which cover the sea. So you have a description by the Rambam of the time to come as being an extension of the world as we know it today, with the exception that Israel will then be free and unobstructed in its pursuit of its spiritual aspirations. Now, there's a problem with this. First of all, the Rambam takes this position from a position stated in the Gemara by Shmuel, that there is no distinction between this world and the world of, or the time of Mashiach, with the exception of Shibud Malchus, that is, with the exception that in the time of Mashiach that there will be no oppression or subjugation by the nations of the world. So, the Rambam is taking this as the decisive position which describes to us the world of Mashiach. But there are so many, many other references in the words of our sages, and indeed even in the Rambam himself, in his Igeres Teimon, in his letter to Teimon, and in other references, that it's very, very difficult for us to deal with this position of the Rambam as it is stated alone. For example, in Teiras Kehanim, which is one of the Midrashim, it's written, how do we know that in the time to come, in the time of Mashiach, that even those trees which by nature do not carry fruit, that they will become fruit-bearing trees? They bring a proof from a verse which referring to the time to come, says, Ve'etz asadeh yitein piryay, the trees of the fields will give forth their fruit. There's a similar statement of our sages in Masechet Ksubos, Amram Chia Barashi, Amarav, in the name of Rav, Asidin kol ilone srak shebe'eretz Yisrael. All of the fruitless, all of the barren trees, meaning all of the trees which are not fruit-bearing trees, are destined in the time to come to bear fruit. He brings the proof. Kietz nosa pilya te'eno. That's, I believe, a pasuk from Yoel. So that would be one reference from the words of our sages, which make it fairly clear that the time of Mashiach is a time in which there are actual physical changes, that there are dramatic appearances, new expressions of the world that were not known to us heretofore. The Rambam, some of the commentators would argue that even those references of our sages are also parable and referred to the fact that in the time to come, in the time of Mashiach, even those people who are bereft of fruit or knowledge or good deeds in those days, in the time of Mashiach, they will come to be knowledgeable and scholarly and will be invested with good deeds. The prophecy of Yeshaya speaks almost undeniably about a time which we find it very hard to construe as the Rambam would have us construe it. And a branch will go out from the line of Yishai, and uh, a sapling will spring forth from its roots, and upon him will rest the spirit of God, a spirit of wisdom and understanding, a spirit of counsel and strength, a spirit of knowledge and the fear of the Lord. And he will be endowed with a sensitivity of the fear of God, and he will not judge by the evidence presented to his eyes, nor that which his ears listen will prove to him things, but he will judge righteously, justly the poor, and will admonish with righteousness unto the I will again over here by Echiach is probably also that he will bring clarity and justice to the humble of the earth, and he will strike the earth with the staff of his mouth and with the breath of his lips he will put to death the wicked. And then it goes into this other thing, and the wolf will dwell with the lamb, and so on. And the baby will play upon the Al-Khul Pasan, the place where the most venomous of snakes lives. Al-Muras Tzifoni Gomu Yodei Hada. And there will no longer be any evil or any destruction. And then all of the nations will restore, all of Israel will bring Jews from all over the world, will restore them back to the land of Israel. It's very, very hard not to see in the prophecy of Yeshaya a change in creation. The Ramban, in Parshas Nitzavim, cites this change very definitively. Over there it talks about the fact that in the time to come that the Almighty will return the captivity of Israel from wherever Jews are scattered, and goes on to say, that the Lord your God will circumcise your heart. And here the Ramban goes on to say as follows, that from the beginning of creation it's been man's this is a somewhat liberal translation here, that from the beginning of creation it has been man's right to choose between good and evil, to make of himself a righteous person or a wicked person, and that's the entire time of Torah, so it is. In order that they might have merit with their choice of good, and that they would suffer the punishment if they chose evil. But in the time of Mashiach, choosing good will be the natural state of man. Man's heart will no longer desire anything which is inappropriate for him. He won't want. And this circumcision of the heart means that all of man's passions and lusts, which correspond to the olas halev, the covering of the heart, that the Almighty will circumcise it, that he should not lust and he should not desire. And man at that time will return to that state in which man was found before Adam ate of the tree of knowledge, a state in which man naturally was inclined to do that which was correct and appropriate. And he says, in effect, that this represents the bitul yetzer hara, that this is a time in which the evil inclination in man will be negated and excised, it will no longer be there. He refers to this by invoking the pasuk in Yechezkel, who says, "V'nasati lachem lev chadosh v'ruach chadosha atim bekibuchem," that God promises that I'm going to give you a new heart and a new spirit I will invest within you, and I will make it so that you will walk with my statutes. And This is the point of reference of our sages who say, "V'higiyu shanim ashatim ein li b'hem chayfetz," that there will come a time. This is a verse in Ecclesiastes. There will come the years of which you will say, "Ein li b'hem chayfetz." I don't want these years. And he says that this refers to the time of Mashiach, where there is no longer the option to choose between good and evil, and that's the meaning of Ein Bahem Chevetz, that there's no longer a time of desire. So the Ramban makes a very clear statement, a statement which is also echoed by many other of our sages and commentaries, and certainly the Kabbalists, that in the time of Mashiach, we are going to be looking at an entirely new world, a world without evil, a world in which there will no longer be a Yetzer Hara, that there's going to be an investiture of an entirely new heart and a new person.
So the lack of chayfetz means we do not desire that time?
No, we don't. We have no desire in that. In other words, we're talking about the desires towards evil.
Inappropriate
desires.
And that's something we're supposed to look forward to?
Right. We look forward to a time in which, yes and no. I mean, we certainly look forward to a time in which we'll no longer be tempted and we will no longer be confronted by the possibility of our ending up either a casualty or worse yet a fatality in this world of free will and Bechira, because just as Bechira opens up for us enormous horizons of possibilities of growth, it also allows for us to self-destruct. So this will be a time which will no longer provide for us the opportunities to grow as we can grow now, but it will prevent us from being able to compromise or corrupt ourselves.
The time where we go back to Adam and Eve, does that mean that at that point not only is it a reward, but now doesn't it to some degree create a challenge?
Create a challenge?
Because in other words, Adam raised, so we're going back to the way Adam was.
No, but the fact is that Adam was challenged, and this is going to be a time in which the Almighty will not bring the Nachash back to tempt us. In other words, Adam was specifically tempted. Had he not been tempted, he would have continued to do naturally everything correct.
So then there's no challenge at this point then.
Right.
Unless we should
have. Right.
Like robots?
Well, wait a minute. According to the Ramban, there's no challenge. The Ramban doesn't say that. The Ramban says, the world can...
accepted opinion?
I mean, Bali Kabbalah, certainly we believe that we follow the position of the Bali Kabbalah. But if you give me a moment, I think we will be able to say, Elo ve'elo divrei Elokim Chaim, that both Rav and Shmuel represent positions which are correct. And that the Ramban does not contradict himself in the other references that he makes to a time which will be a wondrous time. Some of the resolutions which are brought to some of these contradictions, by the way, there are many, many more contradictions to the position of the Rambam, is that when the Rambam says that the world is kiminhagay noyeg, that the world will continue in its minhag, and that there's not going to be anything new, what he means to say is that the world will go back to what it was in its pristine state before Adam sinned. In other words, that it's that olam, it's that world which will now come into being and full and will fully blossom. This is not going to be a presentation of a world which was never here. There was once such a world. There's a world of Eden, a world of paradise, a world in which Adam was in the right place, in which he was a person of complete integrity, in which the world had complete integrity. And in that world, mankind will find itself, and it will continue from that point of departure, which was the world before the Chet of Adam. So one way of understanding what the Rambam stresses when he says the world is not going to be new or different. It doesn't mean that it's going to be the same as it is today. What he means to say is that the Almighty is not going to create something which never was. It's going to go back to the way the world was when it was first created, when it was in its perfect state. And that was a wondrous world. It was a world which did all kinds of magnificent things.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
I don't understand then. What is the purpose of the Nachash ultimately? If ultimately we're going back to a state where Adam was, but without the Nachash, then everything we're going through now is because of the Nachash. So how are we ultimately rectifying that?
How are we rectifying what?
The Nachash. It is ultimately,
because what all of the pain and suffering and all of the choices and all of the struggles that we have represent our efforts to restore the world, or in the world, and to the person of mankind, its original integrity, and that we just have to work very hard at it, whereas it once was. Came to us.
So you're just merely restoring everything. And
we're putting everything right back into balance to bring the world to the point where once again the sovereignty, the unchallenged sovereignty of the Almighty will be triumphant. So that's one resolution. There's a second resolution. The second resolution is that there are steps, and that the Rambam, being that he is writing as a Sefer of Halacha, that he's telling us the steps of the world, which is carried forth as it's reflected by the halacha of Torah. And there are certain halachas in Torah which refer to the time of Mashiach. For example, there's a business with the refuge cities, of which six were designated in the time of Moshe and Yehoshua, and three. The text of the Torah itself makes clearer to be designated in the time of Mashiach. So the halacha of Torah makes it imperative that there will be a time in which Klal Yisrael will be in full command of its legitimate territory, and will then, in the time of the future, will be able to have these refuge cities. So what the Rambam is telling us is about one stage in a two-stage or manifold stage development. That the first stage of Mashiach is going to be a world as we know it, with the exception that Mashiach will be the unchallenged monarch of the world, ruling with complete with the force of righteousness and justice. And that world, as it will then take shape, will be a world in which Israel will be respected as the priestly people, as the nation of teachers, as the spiritual people, as the people of wisdom, and the nations will then all work towards enabling Klal Yisrael to pursue its historic destiny. But that will then yield to a second stage. And that second stage is the stage which is described by the prophets and which is referred to by our sages, which is in fact a very wondrous world, a world in which the barren trees will bear fruit, and in which all kinds of changes will in fact take place. There will no longer be a Yetzer Hara, there will no longer be any desire to do things which are inappropriate, and so on. There will be a Shinui HaTeva, and that will ultimately lead to that next stage, which is Tchias HaMeisim, the resurrection of the dead. So it's in fact going to be a world in which there are going to be, even by the Rambam's own admission, there is going to be a world of resurrection, which is a very dramatic and different development.
Is he bound to that first stage, because otherwise there'd be no reason to need a city of refuge, because either there would be no
murder,
city for even inadvertent murder, or that there'd be no need for protection from a Gaila Adam, because if there wouldn't be a Yetzirah, then a person would feel no need to take revenge.
Right. So it would seem that the Rambam would hold that that first stage is a necessary stage. But we do have a Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara in Sanhedrin brings to light a number of apparent contradictions between verses and the prophets. For example, in one case, it refers to the redemption as something that takes place be'ita, in its time, in its own good time. The place it takes, the reference is achishena, that the Almighty says, I will hurry it. And the Gemara questions, well, if God hurries it, then it's not in its own good time. If it's in its own good time, then it's not hurried. So, to which the Gemara responds that there are two possibilities. One possibility is that Israel will not get its act together. And if Israel does not get its act together and we continue to plod along with our errors and our wrongdoing and our fractiousness and our contentiousness and our evil ways, then the result will be that eventually we'll come to the time which the Almighty has set, beyond which He can wait no longer. In other words, the Almighty has designated a time in history. If we reach that time, we don't pull it together, He will pull it together. He will then dispatch Mashiach, and that's the time which is going to proceed according to the stages that are set forth in the Rambam, where first Eliyahu HaNavi will come and will prepare the world, and then Mashiach will come, and there will be this war of Armageddon, and there will be this destruction of all the evil influences, and all the enemies of Israel will be destroyed, and then the world will come to this period of time in which Israel will come together. The Jews from all over the world will be restored to the land to Eretz Yisrael, and it will become a nation, a priestly people that will pursue its spiritual excellence. But there is also a time of Achishana. There is a time in which we can hasten the coming of Mashiach. In other words, if we do everything correctly, if we as a nation begin to pull together and we unite and we are engaged as a nation in the practice of mitzvahs and in the study of Torah, and we become a nation that has the kind of integrity which the Almighty has defined for us, then the Almighty will send Mashiach, and it will then skip over that whole stage, and will enter this age, this wondrous age of miracles, which and dramatic appearances of new and grand and magnificent things in the world, which, according to the Rambam, in his description of the natural order of things, only comes after phase one has been satisfied. Now, at this point, I would like to pause briefly. I mean, what we have so far before us is the fact that the time of Mashiach, whether in one stage or in two stages, represents a blissful time for Israel. There will no longer be hunger and famine and war and pestilence and pain and suffering and oppression and persecution. All these things will be gone. And there will be blessings, and the world will be full of all kinds of pleasant things, like the dust. And Israel will have a completely free agenda that we will be able to live up to and pursue our priestly program, our agenda of spiritual excellence. And that, in turn, will lead us into another era, which is described by the Ramban, in which there will no longer be any evil inclination, and it will be a world in which the trees will bend their branches so that we will taste of their fruits, in which rather than having to harvest the grain and the millet and knead the dough and bake flour and make bread, we'll go out into the fields and there will be all kinds of fresh pastries for us every day. It will be a wondrous world. Question that I would like to explore with you is, why does this time need to be ushered in by a human being? So far we have this Mashiach. We have a person who, Rambam says very clear, it's going to be a person. We'll talk about it next session, that this is going to be a human being. Who is going to perform, who is going to bring about all of these cataclysmic events. Why does it have to be a person? Why shouldn't the Almighty dispatch an angel of fire to do these things? Or send down a flaming hand from heaven to bring about the destruction of all the enemies of Israel and all kinds of grand music to escort the pastries of the fields to their fruition. So I'd like to scrutinize that together with you for a few moments. The world began with Adam. It began with someone who carried the name of Adam. And as the Ramchal makes very clear, Adam was presented with one test. Had he passed that test? Had he rejected the seduction of the Nachash? Then Adam would have marched into the world of eternity. And we never would have gone through all of this travail with death and pain and suffering and good and evil and so on. We would have entered, mankind, humankind would have immediately have entered this brand new world. But Adam made that fateful choice, and he chose another world. And there's now a process that we must all work through in history. And we have to work through this chait until eventually we can once again arrive at the world as it once was in the time of Adam. Now, that work is something which we must work on in a global sense and in an individual sense. Our sacred writings tell us that the name that was conferred upon Adam is also a neutricum. That is, it's the letters of the name itself teach us something about the nature of man. And that neutricum is, Adam is spelled Aleph, Dalet, Mem, and it represents, the Aleph represents Adam. The Dalet represents David, and the Mem represents Mashiach. Now, left to my own devices, here is something of the direction that I would lend to interpreting that statement. I see that both in the history of mankind and in our each individual personal history, that is, the history of each person or the development of each person, that there are three basic stages. One is called Adam, and one is called David, and one is called Mashiach. On the global scale and the historical scale, I think that we would find that from the beginning of creation until the time of the establishment of the kingdom of David in Israel, when Israel finally got itself together and became a unified people under the throne of David, that represents a time in history of Adam. Adam as represented by the concept of the word Adama. This is the ground, this is the beginning, it's the foundation of history. It's a time in which, as the word Adam itself implies, you have two dimensions. You have the dust, the earth, and the concept of godlikeness, the word Adam El Elyon, I will be godlike. It's a time of great struggle, a time of formation, a time in which the world is very, very much in flux. Until it reaches some point of consolidation and clarity, until it begins to resolve itself under the direction of King David. And that begins a period which reaches a sort of an apex. There's a high point over here where the kingdom is consolidated, where it's a Torah nation under a Torah government, under a Torah sovereign. And there is a time of relative peace from the enemies which surround Israel, and Israel builds the Beis HaMikdash under it, which begins with David and is concluded with Shlomo HaMelech, with King Solomon. Nonetheless, this summit, this peak, crumbles. And we fall from our position of consolidation to go through another period, which results in our going through these four different kinds of galus, and we end up with the redemption of Mashiach, which brings Klal Yisrael and brings the world to a time of Shleimus, of perfection, and that other word which is associated with Shleimus, which is Shalom. The time of Mashiach represents a time of peace. Peace amongst peoples, and peace within the person as people reach towards their full potential. The same thing is true in each one of us. That from the time that we are infants until the time that we reach a level of maturity or a stage of maturity, that there's a big battle going on which rages for control of our person between the forces of light and darkness and good and evil. And hopefully we reach a time in which we begin to discern the direction of our lives, and we assert that kind of governance over our lives. But that governance is far from perfect. And we continue, despite the fact that we now know pretty much what our direction is and what our authority is and how we want to administrate our lives, we continue to stumble and fall, and we continue to bump into all kinds of barriers and walls, until eventually it is hoped that year after year, decade after decade, and eventually by the time we reach a certain point in our elderly years, that we have in fact brought some measure of perfection, of shleimus, to our lives. And that there is also this concept of Mashiach in each one of us, that is, the capacity to redeem ourselves, the capacity to bring a certain peace to our inner person, and a certain shleimus, a perfection to our being. That when we work long enough and hard enough, that there is this bringing to fruition the person that we need to become. The fact that Mashiach is a person is the Almighty's way of stating that it is within the purview, it is within the possibility of man, the human man, to achieve this kind of shleimus. That is, that it's within the purview of humanity as a whole, of Klal Yisrael as the instrumentality of humanity, and that it's within each one of our potential, that we can reach the Mashiach in us, that we can achieve that redemptive power, that we can redeem our lives and invest our lives with the excellence that it should have. It may take us a lifetime, but at the end of our lives we will have gone through the Adam part, we will have gone through the David part, and we will, and it is possible for us to come. As human beings, it's possible for us to achieve a level of perfection. In any event, the important thing over here is that Mashiach needs to be a human being, so that we will all know that it is humanly possible for good to triumph over evil. that it's not a flaming hand of God or some fiery angel who's going to bring redemption to man. It's going to be a person. And it's going to be a person because that person is an extension of all of Klal Yisrael. He's an extension of each one of us. When Mashiach comes, it's going to be all of us as the best of us is represented in Mashiach. And in each one of us, there is that capacity, and each one of us can achieve it. So Mashiach is Hashem's statement to us. That there is within us the chelik of Mashiach. We have that ability of Mashiach. And once we can acknowledge that that there is this capacity, which is a human capacity for good to ultimately triumph over evil, then we know that it is our responsibility. We cannot excuse ourselves that this struggle of good over evil is too big so that we cannot achieve it. Because Mashiach not only makes a statement for the whole of humanity or for the whole of Klal Yisrael, it makes a statement for each one of us that this is a human achievement. Now, this throws off a very interesting commentary on something which we generally relate to in somewhat of a negative frame of reference. There's a concept called arvus, which means, and the Rabbi Ant may say it's supposed to be pronounced arvus, right? Can we call it arvus? Arvus, okay. Arvus means responsibility. It means that each person is responsible for the next. So if there is someone who is doing something which is a violation or a transgression of Torah, it is our responsibility to admonish or reproach that person so as to stop that wrongdoing, because otherwise we are compromised by it, and there is at some point we're going to be judged as having some complicity in the act. If we don't try to stop it, then we are a part of it. So this concept of arvus means that we're responsible for the whole of Israel, and if there's somebody who's doing something wrong in Africa, we have to do something about it. We cannot be responsive, as I've said many times, to the American axiom, which has become hallowed in the practice or in the philosophy or the ideology of America, which is mind your own business. There's no such thing in Judaism as mind your own business. It's never one's own business. There's no such thing as consenting adults. You can consent from today till tomorrow, but I never consent. You cannot burn refuse in your own backyard on the premise that it's your refuse and it's your backyard because you're polluting the air which I breathe. You cannot drill a hole under the bench of the boat on which you're sitting because it will mean that we will all drown. There is a concept of collective responsibility. This business about the fact that Mashiach is a state which we can hasten and which we can bring about by our own choices, and the state which inheres within each one of us means that there is a new dimension to this. I must not only reproach my neighbor and my fellow Jew because of the fact that I am compromised, but forget about whether or not I'm going to be punished for it because I didn't protest it or stop it. But it obstructs the world of perfection which I need. I want this world of Mashiach. I require this world of Mashiach. And if there is someone in the world who is impeding that, then there is someone who is coming between me and the world of perfection which I have toiled so laboriously to achieve. So I have responsibility to that individual, which is a responsibility that derives from the way in which it impinges upon my search for excellence. What's more, whereas the common concept of arvus only revolves around the concept of wrongdoing, in other words, if I see a person doing something wrong, I have to stop them, this concept of arvus revolves around the positive as well. If I am interested in hastening the time of Mashiach, then it's not only that I don't want somebody to do wrong, I want them to do something right. I want them to grow. I want them to excel. Because only when we as a nation are marching forward towards excellence with the kind of resoluteness and the kind of excitement and the kind of yearning, which is what Israel should be all about, that's the only time and the only way in which we're going to bring about the coming of Mashiach. So there is an avus, or a definition of avus, which redefines our responsibility to be not only when someone is doing something wrong, but any time we, or any opportunity that presents itself, that we can add something to someone's life, or that we can encourage someone to move in the direction of their own betterment and their own excellence. That is something which is a direct product of our faith in and our assertion in the coming of Mashiach.
Is that only for Israel?
I think so.
So why wouldn't it apply to Goyim?
Well, it would. But we have to be very careful, because in a world which is very hostile to our morality and to our attempts to bring a conscience to the world, our reaching out to the world in this way might not be well received. I mean, Hitler, Yimach Shemo in Mein Kampf, says that one of the reasons that he would want to destroy the Jews is because they made the world feel so guilty with their morality. And I think that Hitler said what the rest of the world is feeling, that we are not welcome because of the fact that we do represent God's message of expectation of moral conduct in the world. So it's not that the responsibility, there is such a responsibility, theoretically. But I'm not certain that, in practically speaking, that we can do that very easily. And then we need to proceed with caution. And with that, I would like to go back to something which we kind of glossed over in our last session, which is something which I think needs to be revisited, because we need to amplify it a little bit. We spoke about the fact that one of the reasons that we yearn and hope for the time of Mashiach is because our world is such an imperfect world, and the coming of Mashiach would restore to us the Beis HaMikdash and the opportunity to bring karbonos and perform all of the mitzvos, which are part of our living in the land of Israel. I think what we need to focus on right now, and with some greater interest and intensity, is the fact that the reason that this is such a pivotal concept, the waiting of Mashiach, or for Mashiach, is because if we aren't waiting for that world, if we're not yearning, now this world, mind you, represents the world in which we can pursue. In stage one of the Rambam, we can pursue this timeless hope that we've always had, that we can serve the Almighty without want, without need, without the world impinging or intruding upon us with all of its practical demands. And certainly without the persecution or the enmity of the nations. So, and in its ultimate, it represents a time in which we are united with the Almighty, body and soul, as Adam HaRishon was once destined in his perfection to be able to enjoy a relationship with the Almighty, not only on a spiritual level, but as this person who has a guf and a nefesh. So when we know that when the Almighty and through his prophets tells us there can be and will be such a world, and that it's our choice, if we so deign, to bring that world about, if we do not pray for that, if we don't hope for it, if we do not insist upon it, if we don't work for it, then it betrays the fact that we are not serious about our yearning for a relationship with God. We spoke about the basis of reward and punishment being that the purpose and the meaning of life of man in this world is to be able to choose this perfect relationship with the Almighty, who is the source of the greatest and most perfect good. And in this relationship with the Almighty, we achieve the most undreamed of rewards. the greatest bliss, the greatest, and an inconceivable ecstasy. And that's what we work for, and that's what we hope for. And that's what consumes our lives, is making sure that we direct our choices in that fashion, so that eventually that we can have this. But if we can have it, if we can have it tomorrow, if we can have it today, and I'm not hoping for it, I'm not yearning for it, I'm not working towards it, then it says something about the fact that I'm not really serious about wanting this relationship. Because if I want this relationship, then I should certainly want the context that will optimize my capacity to choose that relationship. If I'm really interested in this relationship, I should certainly yearn moment by moment with the greatest eagerness for this world in which I can enjoy that relationship. So it becomes a principle of faith. Because now that the Almighty, for reasons that we have already spoken, has placed it within our grasp to achieve our own individual shleimus, our own individual perfection, our own individual inner peace, our own individual excellence, as well as joining hands with the rest of our people to bring about the peace of our nation and the peace of the world and the excellence of Klal Yisrael and the excellence of the world. Now that He has made that possible, we must work and we must yearn for that time. And not to work for it, and not to anticipate it, and not to long for it, and not to hope for it, says that we don't take the third letter of our existence, or the third letter of our name, or the third stage of history seriously. Or worse yet, that we don't take the importance or the significance of this goal of being united with the Almighty seriously. In either event, if we don't believe that good will triumph over evil, then we despair. And then we allow ourselves to make all kinds of terrible mistakes because we really don't believe that we can choose our own perfection. And if we believe that we can choose our own perfection, but we don't have any sense of the fact that it's important because it brings about something which is worth working towards, then we're also not going to be moved in that direction. So the yearning, this unabated yearning that we've had throughout the ages and which we continue to sing about and talk about and reaffirm every day and every hour of our lives. I continue to wait earnestly, seriously, eagerly. I long and yearn for the time of Mashiach, and knowing that it can be, I must work to try to hasten that time. That is, in fact, a pivotal concept because it places upon me the responsibility of making all of those things happen. And if I do not believe it, then it will become equally manifest in my lethargy or in my indolence to work towards that goal. Mashiach becomes sort of a litmus test of how seriously we take our own work and the promise of our prophets that good can prevail over evil.